confession, all that. It isn't on the schedule. But during the holy hour, over in the chapel, the Florence Chapel, and that's at the lower level of the Florence Chapel. That's what that LL stands for. When we're there, he's going to incorporate confession into that. He'll give us a quick shot of what to, you know, what to think about on the holy hour and that type of thing. And then he'll have a place for confessions that'll be all set up over there. So anybody that wants to go to confession, feel free to use that time for that. You'll be available for that. All right, and so... No. It's, do you know, I got a hard time explaining. In the basement there, yeah. Yep. Yeah, yes. If that's right. Yeah, we can, when we're done over here, we can go on over there as a group. Tracy knows where it is, and we'll follow her. She's not hard to follow, so, you know, whatever. Okay. It is my privilege and my honor to introduce our next speaker, and he's one heck of a guy, and, you know, I know where he's from. It's either Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. I don't know which one. I get them all confused, and so I, you know, whatever. But, you know, this program that we have in Calix, it's a total one of love. It's a total one of, you know, helping our fellow man out, helping, you know, what goes on. And Ken is a pure example of that. And he is our international president for a few more hours, if you haven't, but whatever. But he is the president, so you got to give him that respect. You know, you may not like the guy, but you got to give him that respect. He is the president, okay? So don't, you know. No, he is one super guy. And I met him a year or two ago out in Pittsburgh, was it? That's where you live, is Pittsburgh, right? Yeah. No? No? Whatever, we won't get into that. Anyway, he took me around and he showed me what was going on. And he introduced me to one marvelous, marvelous guy. And he gave me some time with him. And that's Father McKay. And if any of you get a chance to go out there and visit with Ken, Ken will show you all the aspects of whatever goes on, and he'll get you down to have a sandwich there. What do they call them sandwiches? The chili, Philly cheesesteak. Fantastic sandwich. You know, I'm good at eating, you understand that. But anyway, everything I talk has something to do with food. But anyway, Ken is a fantastic host. He's a fantastic person. He's full of love. And that's what we need more of in this country and in the world. And when Ken found Calix, he fell in love with Calix, and he moved, and as anybody knows, as we know, us that were on the board at one time, you know, and those that are still on the board, you know, and doing their job and that type of thing, that Pittsburgh is just, you know, a core, or Philadelphia. Did I say Pittsburgh? I meant Pennsylvania. I'm trying to think of Pennsylvania. Anyway, so whatever it is, it's growing leaps and bounds out there. It's fantastic. So without any more, I'm getting Ken up here so I don't say Philadelphia or Pittsburgh or whatever it is, okay, whatever. So here's Ken.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's just some place we get through to go through to get to St. Paul. I'm sorry, Brian, I didn't mean that. It was funny. I think I mentioned last night in the welcoming remarks that as we were driving out here, Father Lyons asked what the agenda was, and he started to go through it, and he said my name three times. And I should have known ahead of time that's what the plan was, because I put it on the website after all. And so I know I frustrate the heck out of Amy. We're two completely different personalities when it comes to how we do things. And I finally realized last night that I think it has an awful lot to do with me being on the debate team in high school. You're paired up in two teams of two, and we would go in and we would get the same general topic for the whole year. One year it was energy, another year it was medical care, I mean, we were debating abortion before abortion became legalized. And what would happen is you, when the debate started, you were either on the affirmative or the negative. One round you would debate the positive side of the topic, and the next time you would debate the negative side. And when you were on the negative, you never knew what the topic was going to be until the guy opened his mouth to start the debate. And as a result, we would have our files of evidence, and as soon as he would start talking, that guy got 8 minutes, you got 8 minutes after, and you had 3 minutes while your partner cross-examined him. You had 3 minutes to put together that 8-minute speech. And I've lived my whole life that way. You know, I have lived my whole life that way. I finally know, too, from knowing Father McKay, who's been a blessing in my life, as Father Lyons, that if you want to make God laugh, just make plans. And it happens to us all the time, whether it's in Grace Furry or personal lives, what have you. If you really want to make God laugh, make plans. What I found over the years is I just try to do the next right thing, and God puts that next right thing out in front of us to see. So that said, I know that the theme of the convention this year is 6, 7, and 11, and like I mentioned last night, I haven't spent a whole lot of time until recently and picking up Drop the Rock thinking about 6 and 7, but I have spent a lot of time with 11, and I'll talk about the little insight that I have on step 11. I should say, you know, the guys that you had here this morning and Dick this afternoon, these guys probably have all kinds of initials after their names and before their names and titles and boards and that kind of stuff. I went to 5 different colleges, didn't graduate from any of them. So I have no initials, I have no nothing, but I have an unbelievable life experience that as a result of having it, I've been fortunate enough to be able to help a bunch of people, whether it's been in AA. These days, it's probably more people outside of AA than in AA, only because it's anybody I come in contact with. I'm not bashful about why I'm happy and how I got happy. And there's a lot of people that never get to the rooms that aren't happy. You know, people we work with, people we're our neighbors, people you run into on the bus, like Al was talking about the other night. You never know what situation God's going to put you in where you can use your life experience to bring up somebody else's life. So that said, just take 15 seconds. I got 2 questions for you. The first one is, how'd you get here? And I don't mean did you drive here, did you take a plane here, did you, you know, take a cab, but just how did you get here? How did you end up in this spot today in St. Paul, Minneapolis? And now that we're here, why are you here? Do you know why you're here? I spent my whole life running from place to place, thing to thing, person to person, never knowing how I got there, why I got there, or why I was there. I was just there. You know, I would get up in the morning, same plan every day. I'm going to go to work today. I'm going to come home from work and have dinner with my wife and kids, hang out with them tonight, go to bed. And every morning I got up out of bed with a hangover. Every afternoon I was on that same bar stool with the plan of having 1 or 2 drinks and then going home and having dinner. And usually it turned out to be 8, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, midnight, 2 in the morning, whenever I would finally get home. And I would get up the next morning with the same hangover, swearing that today was going to be the day I wasn't going to drink. And then I would go to work, and I'd feel better by noon, and by 4 o'clock I was on that same bar stool. And who knew what time I was going to get home. December 30th of 1991, it was the same kind of deal. Monday morning, went to work, felt like crap, wasn't going to drink that day. 4 o'clock, I'm on the bar stool. 8 o'clock that night, I got on the train to get home, and for some reason that night, instead of walking home, I ended up on the front lawn of my brother-in-law's house, who lived about 3 blocks further away from the train station than my house. That morning, it'd been just like every other morning, waiting for the train, wanting to commit suicide. There was an express train that would come through 5 minutes before the train I got on. And every morning on my walk to that train, that was going to be the day that I would finally have the guts to jump in front of the train. And God had other ideas. I didn't jump in front of that train, and especially on that day, I told my brother-in-law in a blackout that I would go to an AA meeting the next night, December 31st, 1991. And I got a call the next day. He went to work again, hungover. My wife called me around 10 o'clock and said, Paul just called and said he's coming to pick you up at 5:45. Uh-oh, what did I do last night? And it slowly started coming back to me that I had talked to Paul and I think I was going to an AA meeting. And I went to a meeting that night, New Year's Eve of all days. That 6 o'clock meeting, it was me, Paul, two women. And I got a little introduction to AA, and through the grace of God, the 12 steps and the fellowship of AA, I haven't had a drink since. And that's not me. That's not me. The only thing that's attributable to is our God. I know that today. In the beginning, it was me. It was the fellowship a little bit. But today, I know for certain that it was God. Left to my own devices, I never would have stayed sober. There's no way. So how did I end up here? How do I end up in St. Paul, Minnesota, of all places, some 20 years later? And I did the roundabout things in AA. I didn't do everything I was supposed to do. I did get a sponsor. I did make a lot of meetings, but I wasn't doing the steps. 2.5 years into the program, I finally got around to doing 4 and 5 because I thought I found an easy way to do 4 using the sheets from the Joe and Charlie Big Book Study, and it was. It was a relative. I shouldn't say it was an easy way. It was a simple way. My sponsor had written notebooks, and there was no way I was going to do that. So I got through 4 and 5. Like I mentioned last night, I did 6 and 7 in the hour after I did my 5th step. Got right into my 8th step, started making amends, and then worked under that theory for a long time that if you do 1 through 9 once, you can. As long as you maintain 10, 11, and 12, you never have to go back and do those steps today. Like a lot of us in AA, my pendulum swings just like I think a lot of people. We go from the one aspect where there's as many ways to work the program as there are people in it, and then the pendulum swings the other way, and it's no, there's only one way to work the program, and it's the way it's in the first 164 pages, and if you don't do it that way, you're not going to stay sober. Today, I'm somewhere in the middle. And today, it's not necessarily about the do's and don'ts. It's like what we've been talking about here. The more important aspect is my relationship with God, and how do we create that relationship or rebuild that relationship, and then once it's rekindled, how do we continue to maintain it and grow in it? And for me, that's where Calyx came in. I had gotten back to church right around the same time that I got sober, only because my daughter was getting ready to start making sacraments. She was getting ready to make her first communion. So like most Catholics, you know, growing up, I stopped going to church somewhere around junior, senior year of high school. Was away from the church for a long time. Got married in the church once, got divorced, got an annulment, got remarried. And then when my daughter, who's a blessing from that first marriage, it was coming time for her to make her sacraments, it was only natural for us to start going back to Mass again. So I was going back, and I started hearing things in the rooms that really connected with what I was starting to learn again about my faith. I kind of jumped back in 110% in church. I went back to being a lector. I soon became a Eucharistic minister, got involved in different activities within the parish, but always had this yearning to learn more. And, you know, many of you know this story. It's been in the chalice, but it was in that 3-year program where I came to find out about Calyx. And Calyx has, without a doubt, turned my life upside down, inside out, and backwards because of the people that I've met in it, and just the grace that it's afforded me, the insights that I've gotten about myself, about other people. And today, it's more about the insights about other people. Like when the speakers were talking this morning, it's more about the we and looking at other people differently. I think it's easy for us to look at ourselves differently once we get sober. You know, we're not drinking. We think a little bit better about ourselves. Once we get through 4 and 5, and maybe in 7, some of those defects start to go, we still think, you know, we think a hell of a lot better than ourselves for the most part. But it's everybody else that we still talk about the same way, right? You go into rooms and, you know, you constantly hear people upset because somebody else is talking about them in the rooms. I think it takes a lot longer for us to start looking at the people that we come into contact with on a daily basis as children of God, as somebody that are people deserving of our time. When we have all these other demands, it would be so easy to fold up our tent and say, okay, now I got a life. For all those years, I had no life. My life consisted of working and drinking, working and drinking, if you were fortunate enough to be able to continue to work while you were drinking. But now that I got this life back, I got to make up for all this lost time and take care of me. And that's not what it's about, at least what I've come to learn. The greatest satisfaction I get out of life today is when I get on my knees at night and I'm doing my 10th step and I review the day and I can see the faces of the people that I came into contact with and that I may have benefited them, you know? And when I was drinking, I didn't help anybody. I was like a wrecking ball through people's lives, you know, through my first wife, through the beginning of my marriage with my second wife, my older kids who got to see me a little bit before I got sober. Today, I don't have to be a wrecking ball. I can be a person that's able to actually help people. A lot of times, it's not people in the rooms, it's people I work with, you know, that they're struggling just like everybody else. And just to give them a kind word or, hey, say how you doing and really listen to them when they answer. How many times do you walk by people or you see people in a hall or at church and you walk up to them, hey, how you doing, as you walk away? You know, if you're going to ask the question, at least have the respect to give them 30 seconds to hear the answer. And then think about what the answer is and whether or not there's anything you can do to help them in whatever problem they're going through. Because a lot of times they start talking about their problems. Here we go again. I got enough problems of my own. Why do I want to listen to yours? You know? And what happens, at least for me, you start to help people with their problems, and all your problems seem to melt away. You know? I can say it here about Grace Ferry with Harry being here, because he'll understand. I can't always say it when I'm down there. Because when I started going down there, it was a whole different world. You know, I said it two Tuesday nights, they asked me to give a kind of a lead in a Calyx meeting. And where I grew up and where I go to AA meetings, it's Country Club AA, man. There's nobody there that ever ate out of a dumpster. There's nobody there that ever went a night without a bed. Very few had long-term unemployment, although today with the way the economy is, there's a lot of people that have been out of work longer. But for the most part, the people that I would see in AA meetings had jobs, were eating at a dinner table every night, and their lives, for the most part, were pretty good. I got introduced with Father McKay. I get down to Grace Ferry. These people are living on their street. The kids are overdosing, probably at the rate of one every other month. You got shootings. You got stabbings. And I couldn't believe it. And I started going down there initially to see what I could do to help. And I was coming out of there so grateful that I had no problems. If I compare my problems to the problems of the people that I come into contact with, I don't have a single problem in the world. You know, not a one. So, as my sponsor, I learned from my sponsor a long time ago. You know, I got a great life today, as long as I continue to do the things that I was told to do in the beginning. Then along comes Calyx, and back comes the Catholic roots. And I'm not ashamed to talk about it anymore, especially in the rooms. We go back through the big book, and I got to do a presentation at a Matt Talbot retreat weekend at our retreat house not too long ago to go and introduce Calyx to them, give them a little talk about Calyx. And it's like, let me go back through the big book again and find out the areas in there where it actually talked about religion. And it's obvious to me, or it's becoming more obvious, I should say, we're talking about a world in the 1930s where probably a lot more people went to church on Sunday than go to church today, where you had blue laws, where businesses weren't open on Sunday so that they could afford people time to go to church. So when they started going through it, and you know, they started with coming out of the Oxford movement. You have this Christian movement, and it became obvious to them that the only way that they were going to be able to help a bigger group of people was to become non-denominational. But it wasn't to become non-religious. It was non-denominational in that there was no set religion. You know, you didn't have to be Catholic. You didn't have to join the Oxford group. You didn't have to be Lutheran or Methodist or any of the Protestant denominations. You could be whatever denomination you were when you came to AA, but I think in the back of the founders' minds in those first 100, that they probably thought that once you sobered up, you were probably going to go back to church. So it was only logical that they put it in the big book just that way. For example, I'm not going to quote pages. This is somewhere in the sixth chapter. I think it's around page 97. It'll say, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. How does anybody in an AA room get off telling us that they don't want to hear about priests or rabbis or ministers and the things that they have to offer when it's right in the first 164 pages? They'll be the first ones to tell you, hey, you're not working the program right. But when you tell them that, hey, this comes out of the first 164 pages too, they want to toss you out on your ear. And I remember giving a lead one time. And I was at, my home group was on a Thursday night. I just started taking communion to the homebound on Sundays. And I'm giving a lead on a Thursday night. And I share about that, how this experience I had bringing communion to this elderly woman that was a shut-in, and how great I felt after doing that. And after the meeting, there's a guy that I would see at 6:30 Mass on a regular basis, comes up to me and says, you can't share about that in here. We don't want that Catholic stuff in here. And this guy was a daily communicant, you know? It also goes on in the ninth chapter of our big book. Though the family has no religious connections, they may wish to make contact with or take membership in a religious body. So not only does the program want to, you know, suggest a spiritual experience, it actually recommends that you become a member of a spiritual or a religious body. How do people get off telling us that we can't talk about this stuff in an AA room? How do people tell us we can't talk about Calyx in an AA room? You know? That's what the founders expected. They expected us that once we sobered up, that the next natural step was going to be to join with our wife and children and go back to Mass or church on Sunday. I may be wrong, but I also see a lot of people that are still suffering in AA as a direct result of not doing some of these things. You know, Dick, when he was sharing earlier, out of the big book earlier, and I don't have it here, about that altar that we created, and he said that the altar could, you know, when we're interactive addiction, you know, vodka, wine, Oxycontin, cocaine, pornography, sex, whatever your altar was. I think there's a lot of people that are sitting in the rooms today that are still creating altars. It may not be, you know, it may not be booze or drugs or sex or any of the other things we're addicted to, but they create these altars that say it's okay to continue with some of the behaviors that they're not ready to give up yet, you know? And I don't have all the answers, and I hope I don't sound like, I'm preaching, because the people that are here, I know you know it, you know? What I do want to get across, though, is don't be afraid to share it, you know? You know it works. You know it works. Other people will ask you, why are you so happy all the time? Why do you always have a smile on your face? How do you get through the day with all the same things that I go through? How do you get through it? Tell them. Normal people were in the rooms. I get on my knees in the morning and I pray and I ask God to help me today. And when I get home at night, I get on my knees again. I go to Mass every day. You what? Yeah, you must be a religious zealot. You go to Mass every day. And like, no, I go there, you get half hour, 45 minutes of peace and quiet. You get some of that little conscious contact with God. You know, I love telling people when they ask about conscious contact with God. I said, I have it whenever I go to church. I put my hand out and the priest lays my God in my hand. They look at you like you got six eyes. You know, what do you mean he lays them in your hand? And then you can open up a discussion if they're open to it. But just some of these little things. Last night when we were down at the grotto, we sang that song, You Are Mine. And to this day, when I hear that song, even in church, I start crying. That song, you know, Be Not Afraid. I was afraid all the time. What do you mean, be not afraid? And to know, you sing that, and to know that God's with you all the time, you know, that he is there. And the one line that jumped out at me last night as we sang it, and it hadn't jumped out before, I am the peace the world cannot give. I am the peace that the world cannot give. Why do people come to 12-step groups? Why do they come to 12-step groups? They come initially a lot of times because their employer sent them, the jail sent them, a judge sent them. They just want to get cleaned up long enough to and get healthy enough to go back on another tear. If they stick around long enough, they want peace. They want serenity. They see it on some of our faces, and they ask us, how did you get it? And then I'm listening to that song last night. I am the peace that the world cannot give. The AA room, short of a real God, cannot give peace. If that's true, the only way they're going to get peace is to find a conscious contact with a real God. You know, not one that goes along with the things we want. One that prescribed things, not because they were do's and don'ts, and he wants an excuse to send us to hell. You know, I used to look at the commandments, and that's what they were. They were a list of do's and don'ts, not a list of recommendations that, hey, guess what? If you don't do these things, you're going to be happy, joyous, and free. You don't kill somebody. You don't steal from somebody. You love God. You love your neighbor. You respect your parents. You do those things, you're going to be happy, joyous, and free. Nobody told me that. They were a list of things that if I wanted to go to heaven, I better not do those things. You know? Today, you look at those Ten Commandments, I tell my kids, that's not a list of rules. That's a list of suggestions that if you abide by these, chances are you're going to be pretty happy when you grow up. You know, don't make the same mistakes that I made. Why do I come to Calyx? For exactly the reasons that I think Jeff talked about this morning. I can talk about my God, and I can talk about love. My home group in particular was one where they often talked about God. A lot of the guys I went on retreat with would go to that meeting. And we would talk about love. I remember just it's humorous now. It wasn't humorous at the time. I was a couple years sober, and we would go to an anniversary meeting. And a lot of times the guys would bring their wives, even though most of them weren't in Al-Anon. But it was like a social thing, and they'd have these speakers. And a lot of times, you only have a speaker. You wouldn't have any sharing afterwards. But this one night at my home group, a guy got up and he gave a talk for about 40 minutes. And the main theme was love. And he went on and on about love and how great love was and love in AA and love this, love that. And my lovely wife is sitting next to me and he gets done and I put my hand up. And my name's Ken and I'm an alcoholic. And you know what? I really didn't know what love was until I got to AA. And I could just feel these eyes going through the side of my head. And look, we get in the car. My wife says to me, what do you mean you didn't know what love was till you got to AA? And it's like, no, I didn't know what real love was till I got to AA. And I didn't. And I had to explain, I didn't. You know? Love to me before I got into the program was, you know, if you're willing to hop in the back seat after we've had a few drinks, that's love. You know, everything with love was about sex. It had nothing to do with doing the right thing for other people just because it's the right thing to do. I used to love helping people move because when you help them move, there was always a barrel of beer and sandwiches and pizza when you got done. I'll help anybody move, you know. You know, I had a van. I got a van, I think, just so I could help people move, just so I could get the free beer and the food afterwards. You know, today I help my kids move from one apartment to another, just because it's the right thing to do. You know, and a lot of times, that's what love is. It gets as simple as that. Just do something because it's the right thing to do. And a lot of times, I don't want to do it. My life is as busy as anybody else. You know, I have a wife, I have four beautiful kids, I got a full-time job, I help run a retreat weekend, I got involved in Calyx, I coach baseball and basketball for my son. Fortunately, my daughter's not involved in sports, and I don't know how to play piano, so she's got to go somewhere else to learn how to play the piano. But I do. I have time limits just like everybody else, which is why this weekend, for me at least, is kind of bittersweet. I think when 2 years ago when we were in Omaha, you know, my biggest thing, and I asked the question to Jeff this morning, you know, when I was asked to be president, my big thing was, how do we get the word out about Calyx, and how do we unify all these different Catholic entities that are out there that are trying to basically do the same thing, help people get sober, stay sober, and get re-involved in our Catholic faith. And although we've made very tiny progress in that. I was real happy to hear from Jeff this morning that I think there's a door that's been opened to us with the NCCA that we'll be able to make huge strides in that area. So there were probably a lot of things that I wanted to get, you know, grand plans again, make God laugh. Grand plans, the things we wanted to get done that haven't. One of the things, and we'll talk more about it tomorrow, is going to be the website and the internet presence. And I know at least in Philadelphia, and Margo was sharing last night about how people are definitely finding this as a result of doing searches on the internet for Catholic AA. So even though that's not what we are, you know, we're not Catholic AA, but that's what they're putting. You ask them, how did you find us? Well, I put Catholic and AA in Google, and Calix showed up. So some of the things to consider going forward with Calix, and it's not my vision. It's some of the things that we do in Philadelphia that I think others can do to help either grow your own units, start other units, but just get the word out about Calix. One of the things that we were really blessed with in Philadelphia, and the people that have gone to the conventions the last few years know that probably the two biggest reasons why AA, or Calix rather, has been successful in Philadelphia is because of Father Lyons and Father McKay. And now Amy found some spiritual guides early on for media, actually before they got started, with Father Tom and a Jesuit brother. And to me, there's no doubt in my mind now that the successful units are the ones that have clergy that are really committed to being involved in Calix. They understand what we're doing, and they're willing to give it their time. In Glenside, in Philadelphia, two of the four units now meet on a weekly basis. I was sharing with Margo again last night. If you're meeting on a monthly basis, I mean, it's good. It's definitely better than nothing, and I know that's been the way it's been for a long, long time, and I think part of it is because of clergy and how much time that they have to give. But if you miss a monthly meeting, and now you're talking 2 months between a meeting, and then you miss a second month in a row, you know, 3 months of not being somewhere, the chances of you getting that person back are going to be hard, especially in, you know, today. Like we talked about the highlights of Calix back in the 60s and 70s when they probably had their highest membership. And I think a lot of people were doing a lot fewer things than they're doing today. I just know personally with my own kids, between sports and activities and school activities, other stuff that people are involved in, you can't always make that same hour on a monthly basis. Things come up, especially if you're meeting on a weekend, on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning. Not everybody plans everything they do around that Calix meeting. And again, if they miss a month, chances are you may get them back the second month. I would think once they miss 2 or 3 months in a row, it's going to make it a lot easier for that person not to come back. So work with your clergy. See, you know, maybe you have your regular monthly meeting and then an additional weekly meeting. I know like York had done that for a while. You know, meet on a Wednesday night or a Thursday night instead. Maybe a smaller group and do a literature meeting of some sort, going through Father Luger's book or going through Father Harbaugh's books. There's so much material out there that we can go through. And I know because of meeting weekly in the Philadelphia area, we've been able to do all that. We went through Father Harbaugh's book. The Father Luger's book, you can do it in, we take like 13 weeks, I think, because step two is so long in there that we take 3 weeks to do it. But like 13 weeks, if you do 13 weeks of that and then something else for 13 weeks and then you come back to that for 13 weeks. So, you know, almost twice a year you're going through Father Luger's book. And people that open that up are just amazed that anybody talks about the steps from a Catholic perspective the way Father Luger did. I hear from people all the time, I never heard anything like this before. This is great. Why don't we hear about this all the time? So that would be another thing. If you haven't gone through Father Luger's book as part of your Calix meeting, you know, please consider it. Use your neighboring parish bulletins, not just your own parish. I know from what the original group in Glenside at St. Luke's, I'm the only parishioner that's a regular attendee at that meeting. I think over the last 5 years, there might have been two or three other parishioners that actually come from St. Luke's. Everybody else comes from the surrounding parishes. So you need to broadcast. Probably the single biggest thing that happened in Philadelphia was a year after we got started when Amy came to us and said, you know what, we should let the diocese, every parish in the diocese, know what we're doing. And we put together a little packet with Calyx information, AA information, Al-Anon meeting list, and it was basically a resource that would go in the office in the rectory. So if anybody came into the rectory or called the rectory and said, hey, I got somebody that's got a problem with an addiction, can you help me? Even if the priest or the secretary wasn't well-versed in recovery, they at least had a couple resources at their hand to use. And I've gotten calls from two different parish secretaries about that mailing, but the single biggest one that came out of that was it ended up on Father McKay's lap. That's how he and I got introduced, was through that mailing. So it helps if you have a connection or you know how to work with people at the diocesan level. They can provide you mailing lists and all that kind of stuff, the contacts in each of the parishes. You spend, you're going to have to spend a few bucks, maybe get the materials from Jim, some of the pamphlets, buy some meeting lists and that kind of stuff from AA and Al-Anon, and put together a little packet. Mail it to every parish in the diocese. You have no idea what fruit that can reap. And like I said, it was probably the single biggest thing that helped us grow Calyx in Philadelphia. I think after this morning, consider NCCA's substance abuse program at the parish level. I don't think Calyx is for somebody that's coming in off the street and looking to get sober. I think it could do, at least for me personally, would have done more harm than good. If I had walked into my first AA meeting and they told me that, you got to get back to Mass, you should go to confession, you go to communion, read Scripture, and some of the things that Calyx prescribes, I would have been out the door the next day. You know, if I want that, I'll just go back to church. I don't need another organization to tell me to do that. But I think we need to find a way to get them into the rooms, to get people sobered up, get their head clear enough, and then try to reintroduce them into their faith through Calyx. I think Calyx is the supreme way, the ideal way for us to do that. You know, and that's what really drove me to Calyx, was sitting in the rooms week after week, month after month, year after year, hearing the lead get up there and say, my name's Ken, I'm an alcoholic, I was born and raised Catholic, and then they go on and tell their story. And I hear that today even. And just by saying that, if you admit that you were born and raised Catholic, that means that you have a whole arsenal of tools at your disposal. You just need to know that you have them. You know, it's like becoming an apprentice plumber or something like that, and they hand you your bag of tools, you know, and you got to, over time, you figure out what those tools are again, you know, how to turn a wrench and how to connect pipes and whatever else it is the plumbers do. It's the same thing with our Catholic faith. We have all these tools. We have prayers. We have sacraments. We have some of the greatest saints that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. They tell us how to pray. They give us some of their prayers. They led by experience, and that's why we made them saints, you know. So we have all these tools, and these people that are sitting in the rooms, they're a lot of times sitting right next to us, going through unbearable pains and tragedies and everything else, and don't even know that they have a toolkit in their back pocket and what those tools can do for them. You know, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm at this convention, because it reinvigorates me to remind people that they have these tools, that you have everything. If you are Catholic and you have been given the sacraments, you have just about everything you need to get through life if you just start using them again. You know, how incredible is that? One of the other things we do is we have business cards. I got a box of them in the back. I expect everybody to take a couple, not just to get in touch with me, but just as a sample. It's an easy way. Somebody in a room says, I'm Catholic, or you can tell by the way they're sharing that they're Catholic. You can walk up to a meeting and say, hey, listen, I'm involved in an organization for Catholics in recovery. We talk about the 12 steps and how it matches up with our Catholic faith. If you're ever interested, you know, give me a call or stop by our meeting. And the card gives contact information and where the meeting is. You just hand it to them. And like a lot of times, people, you know, I hear stories all the time about AA where people got names or numbers or contact information. My sponsor got it off of TV, and he woke up one morning feeling so bad that he finally made the phone call to the Malvern Institute that was advertised in an infomercial the night before, and that's how he got sober. You never know when somebody might open a book that they might use this as a bookmark, and they open a book and see the card again. Oh, maybe I'll give that a shot, you know. We never know how God's going to work. That's the cool part, I think, about life. You get these surprises all the time. You never know how God's going to work. You know, the least likely things that you think will happen actually turn out to be some of the most profitable. And just a couple words about step 11. I had no idea how to pray and meditate. You know, 12 years of Catholic school, I knew the rote prayer. I knew the rosary. It was kind of, the rosary was one of the ways that I got back involved in my faith. You know, I happened upon a website, Catholicity.com. Back in the day, it was run by Bud McFarland Jr. And back then they had forums, and you could ask questions, and they had priests on there that would answer them. It was kind of like the precursor to Catholic Answers, for those that are familiar with Catholic Answers. And I started praying the rosary. And not getting a whole lot out of it, other than it was like 15, 20 minutes of quiet time. I actually thought about some of the meditations and the mysteries and what have you. But, you know, no huge spiritual awakenings were coming as a direct result of those prayers. And over time, it builds. You know, you need to build a prayer life. It's not something you start, you know, you wake up in the morning and today's the day I'm gonna have a prayer life. And all of a sudden be able to pray for 20 minutes at a time. I couldn't pray for 30 seconds at a time, let alone, you know, 20 minutes or a half hour, holy hour. How do you spend a whole hour, you know? And today I can actually sit through a whole hour of adoration without, you know, wigging out and, you know, wondering what I'm doing there and getting all distracted and what have you. But a couple people mentioned today about words, and, you know, we was mentioned a couple times, the first word and the first step. Something that hit me probably about a year ago was in the 11th step. And that word's only, you know. Now I'm going to lose it. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. When you pray, what do you pray for? You know, for years it was, doing the next right thing, taking care of something at work, taking care of my wife, taking care of my kids, praying for people that were sick, praying for people that had died. And even in our own style, like I would love to, like Dick was saying, about calling the headquarters and finding out where they came up with care. How did they come up with only? You know, the prescription is that we pray only for the knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry it out. We don't pray for jobs. We don't pay for cars. I got a guy now that I'm sponsoring. It's never been married, and he's looking for a relationship, and he's telling me he's praying for a relationship, and I'm like, no, you only pray for God's will. If it's God's will for you to be in a relationship, you'll get that relationship, but don't count on it, you know, don't count on it. And I think that's where it's hard for people, because we do, we pray for things that we think are going to make us happy, things that we think are going to make other people happy. You know, how many times did you give people gifts thinking it was going to make them happy? And you find out that they re-gifted it to somebody else, you know, 6 months later. You know, we don't know what's good for us, and we don't always know what's good for other people. Only God knows. So what our job is to get in tune with what God's will is for us. And I'm not perfect at it. I still don't know. But I do know that when I'm open to it, and that's all I pray for, that when I live an hour at a time and I look for things that are coming into my life at any given moment, you know, whether it's a phone call or somebody stops at my house, somebody at work. I never know when it's going to happen or what's going to happen, but to be open, and that's what I pray for, that when these things happen, that I'm open to what God wants me to do in that moment and the courage to do it. And I think that's what's part of the 10th step. When I review my day at night, a lot of times I look for those instances during the day of when God tried to come into my life, and then what was my response to that calling at that time? Did I do what God wanted me to do? Did I hold the door open for somebody? Did I give somebody a ride that asked for a ride? Or did I say, no, I'm too busy, I don't have time? Or did I just ignore it altogether? You know, that's a big one. You can see people that need things, and it's, rather than go and ask if you can help, we kind of shuffle off to the side and get out of range before they have a chance to ask. That's one of the things I know I'm guilty of. And there's a great saint that actually wrote a whole little pamphlet on it. St. Alphonsus de Liguori, Uniformity with God's Will. And he goes through a series of sequences of how to find out and use prayer to find out what God's will is for us, how to make our will uniform with God's will. And I went on the pro-life march for the first time ever this year, and went with a couple friends. Two of them were women, and they're in the two seats on the bus behind me, and we're talking. And somehow this whole thing with God's will came up. One of them was in recovery and one of them wasn't. I said, oh, I found this great pamphlet, and it's completely changed my life. And she was like, really? What's it about? I said, well, it's one sentence in one pamphlet, and you won't believe what it says. It says this: the principal effect of love is to unite the wills of those who love each other as to make them will the same things. The principal effect of love is so to unite the wills of those who love each other as to make them will the same things. This time last year, I had no idea that that's what love was. I knew I loved my wife, but I thought all the time it was a compromise. She had her will, I had my will, and we would come together to do things that were for the kids. And then on everything else, it was all about time. What do I only have 24 hours in a day. I'd like to sleep for at least 4 or 5, so that leaves 19 or 20 where I can actively do things. And there's things that I want to do. There's things that my wife wants me to do. There's things my employer wants me to do. There's things that my kids want me to do. So everything in life had to be a compromise. You know, I'll not work on my baseball card collection so I can paint the bathroom because that's going to make my wife happy. It was all about compromise. And I read that line, that the principal effect of love is so to unite the wills of those who love each other as to make them will the same things. Today I actually try to figure out what my wife really wants and conform my will to her will. It's not a compromise anymore. It's not I'm going to give up something that's probably meaningless anyway. Watch a Phillies game, watch an Eagles game, even worse, watch an Eagles game. It's not giving something else up to fulfill my wife's needs or her will or what have you. It's the goal is for the two of us to actually will the same thing. How incredible is that? Hey, I don't know. I swear I wouldn't watch him again until Andy Reid was gone. You know, they finally got rid of Donovan McNabb. Now if they could just get rid of Andy Reid, we'll be set. But, I mean, how incredible is that to actually wake up in the morning and think that not only do I not want to do my will, but maybe I want my wife's will to be mine too. And I think the same thing applies with God. If we really love God, that we may want to find out what his will for us is and to try to conform our will to his will. Because I don't think he wills anything bad for us. You know, a lot of what goes on in the world is evil, is a direct result of Satan. There's so many people out there that will tell you today, even my own mother in the last couple months, telling me that the devil really doesn't exist. You know, this is a woman born and raised Catholic, you know, in her 70s, and now she all of a sudden she doesn't believe in the devil. I know evil exists, but I don't think there's anybody out there that I know personally that does things because they're evil. They just don't know what they're doing all the time. You know, we were talking about on the way out, especially with what's going on in Philadelphia. I don't think a single one of those bishops that were part of the cover-up were evil. I don't think Joe Paterno at Penn State was evil because of what Jerry Sandusky did and didn't bring it all out. They did the same thing a lot of us did. They got caught up in the lie. You know, you lie the first time and you get away with it. And then all of a sudden you got to keep lying to cover up all those other mistakes that happened. I think the clergy abuse was a result of that. I think the Jerry Sandusky thing in Penn State was that. I think my ongoing drinking as an active alcoholic was a result of that. And I won't speak for anybody else, but because of the stories I've heard over the last 20 years, I think it's the same thing. You live the lie. And the only way to continue to exist without going insane is to perpetuate that lie. You know? Not today. I try to be as honest as I can be. I didn't pull that one out of the hat this morning. Today it was trustworthiness. But I know honesty will come out of there one of these days. Anyway, I don't need to take the full hour. It was funny. I was looking through the schedule, and it's like you got all these guys with letters after their names, these prominent speakers. They get 45 minutes, and then they got me scheduled on air for an hour. And it's I don't think I need to say much more. I think what Al said is true, though. I really love Calix. It's what it deepened my faith. I had some faith when I got here, but I do. I think. And I share it especially, and you can even share about it in the AA rooms, because you talk about, you know, God and our higher power. When I was created, God created me with a great big hole in me. He didn't create me perfect. He doesn't expect me to be perfect. But he put that hole there. And I think from the day we're born until the day we die, we spend our whole life trying to fill that hole. And we try to fill it with all different things that we think is going to satisfy that hole. You know, we fill it with sex, drugs, rock and roll, and anything else we can get our hands on, food, gambling, and we just keep shoving all that stuff in there, thinking that this is what's going to make me happy, you know. And we can never fill that hole. It sits there and sits there and sits there with all that garbage in it. And that's what the beauty of the 12 steps is for me, because you start working 4 and 5, and you find out what's in the hole, and then you tell somebody else what's in the hole, and slowly that stuff, through God's help, in 6 and 7 and 8 and 9, that hole gets emptied of all that garbage that we filled it with over all those years. And little by little, God starts to fill that hole. And that's his expectation. He put it there, in my mind, he put that hole there on purpose. And telling us that the only way you're going to fill that hole is with me. I'm the only one. You know, I'm the peace. I'm the way. I'm the life. I'm the truth. You know, and it's only through him that we become whole. You know, and how many years we beat our heads against the wall, chasing money, chasing women, chasing men, chasing drugs, chasing alcohol to fill that hole. Only to be, you know, in the end, when we finally make our way into the 12-step room, that hole's, we feel completely empty, you know. Today, my hole's filling up, you know. I think it's even more, it's beyond half full, which is cool, you know, which is cool. And that's what makes us desire to go out and share that with other people. You know, let them know what's in your hole. You know, let them know what makes you happy, what makes you want to get out of bed every morning and go to work or do the activities you do. And that's where we get it. How many times do you hear, where do you get all the energy to do that? I get it from God, because God wants me to do it. So he gives me the energy to make sure I can do it. That's where I get the energy. You know, it's not a special diet that Margo prescribed, although I'm getting better at it. More to come on our website tomorrow about diets. But I get it from God. He's the one. If he wants me to do it, he'll make sure it gets done. You know, when I first got involved with Calyx, it was going to be one more thing. I thought my wife was going to throw a fit. What do you mean you want to get involved in something else? And my experience has been, over the 20 years I've been sober, if God wants me to do something, he removes every roadblock that I put up or I think is going to be put up. You know, I put those imaginary roadblocks that I can't do this because, I can't do that because. And somehow or other, God melts every one of those roadblocks. And next thing you know, I'm doing it. And not being hollered at by my wife because I'm doing one more thing. So Calyx was here long before I got here. 12 Steps was definitely here long before I got here. Although we share the same birthday, June 10th, not 1935. I'm about 36 years younger than, or 26 years younger than AA. But we share the same birthday. And but some of you guys have definitely been here a lot longer than I have. And I'm just glad you were here when I got here. And I'll continue to do whatever I can in the future to promote Calyx and see that this thing continues to grow. I definitely plan to remain on the board and work with whoever we're about to elect in the next hour. I can't wait. I'm going to call my wife at 5 o'clock and say, you can't get on me anymore for being the president of Calyx, because I'm not one anymore. So that's enough. I want to thank everybody for going out of their way to be here this weekend. And, you know, we're only about halfway through, so hang in there. Thanks.